Good evening, fellow Vermonters. Welcome to this live telephone town hall meeting with your United States Senator, Bernie Sanders. I'm Phil Fiermonti, Senator Sanders' State Director, and I will be your moderator tonight. Thank you very much for participating in this unique opportunity to interact with Bernie about the important issues facing our country. I'm speaking to you live from our Burlington office, and Bernie will be joining us shortly from Washington. We're now calling people from throughout Vermont. We have over 2,000 people on the call now. What we will do tonight is give Bernie some time in a couple of minutes to discuss the work he is doing in Washington, including his efforts to stop the disastrous Republican health care plan, which result in 22 million Americans being thrown off of health insurance. He will also discuss President Trump's budget, which would give huge tax breaks to billionaires while making massive cuts to education, environmental protection, and the needs of our children and seniors. After Bernie speaks, we will take questions from you until 8 p.m. If you would like to ask Bernie a question tonight, please press star 3 on your phone. You will then be connected with one of our staff members in our Burlington office who will try to get your call into the senator. So again, if you would like to ask a question to Senator Sanders tonight, please press star 3 on your phone now. Again, thanks so much for joining this telephone town hall meeting with Senator Bernie Sanders. We anticipate having a lot of calls coming in this evening, so we can't promise that you will be able to ask your question during tonight's telephone town hall. If you do not get to ask your question tonight, please feel free to call Bernie's office tomorrow at his toll-free number, which is 1-800-339-9834. I'll repeat that. If you are not able to reach the senator tonight to ask your question, certainly feel free to give our office a call tomorrow, and we'll get an answer for you. And that number, again, is 1-800-339-9834. You can also email Senator Sanders from his Senate webpage, which is sanders.senate.gov. You may want to jot that down, his webpage. By the way, his webpage is very good. It has lots of useful information updated every day with what's going on in Washington and the work that Bernie's doing. And that webpage, again, is sanders.senate.gov. And there's a place there where you can send in an email to ask your question, again, if you're not able to get through tonight. And let me mention that if you or a member of your family is having a problem with a federal agency, be it Social Security, Medicare, the VA, please feel free to call our office and speak to one of Bernie's caseworkers. They can often help Vermonters who are having problems and are sometimes able to cut through the red tape. Again, the toll-free number for Bernie's office is 1-800-339-9834. So if you know anybody that has an issue with a federal government agency, they can call us at that number. Again, if you want to ask a question to Senator Sanders tonight, please press star 3 on your phone now, and you will be connected with one of Bernie's staffers in Burlington who will get you in the queue. Again, we're going to try to get to as many people as we can. Before we get Senator Sanders on, I would like to begin by asking you to answer a poll question. We will get the results instantly, and you can answer the poll question right on your phone. The first poll question is, Senate Republicans have unveiled their proposed health care plan to replace Obamacare. Do you support or oppose the Republican health care plan? Press 1 if you support the Republican health care plan. Press 2 if you oppose the Republican health care plan. Press 3 if you feel you don't know enough about the plan. And press 4 if you're unsure. So once again, we're waiting for Senator Sanders, who will be on momentarily. We have a poll question we'd love to have you answer. I'm already seeing over 200 people who have voted. 75% have said that they oppose the plan. The question, again, is Senate Republicans have unveiled their proposed health care plan to replace Obamacare. Do you support or oppose the Republican health care plan? Press 1 if you support the Republican health care plan. Press 2 if you oppose the Republican plan. press 3 if you feel you don't know enough about the plan, and press 4 if you are unsure. Okay, now we have over 1,200 folks who have voted and overwhelmingly opposed to the Republican health care plan. Again, Senator Sanders will be joining us in a few minutes. Thanks for your patience. Again, if you have a question for Bernie tonight, press star 3 on your phone, and you will be connected to a staff person who will get you in line to ask your question. We have, before Senator Sanders comes on, let me ask you one more poll question, and this is to give Senator Sanders an idea of what you think are the most important, or what is the most important issue that you're concerned about facing the country today. If you believe the most important issue is the economy, please press 1. If you believe it's health care, please press 2. If you believe it's climate change in the environment, press 3. If you believe it's immigration, press 4. If you believe it's civil rights, press 5. If you believe it's foreign policy, press 6. If you believe it's national security, press 7. And if you believe it's some other issue, press 8. So again, we have a polling question for you before Senator Sanders joins the call in just a minute, and it is, which of the following is the most important issue facing the country today in your opinion? 1 for the economy, 2 for health care, press 3 if you believe it's climate change and the environment, press 4 if you believe it's immigration, press 5 if you believe it's civil rights, press 6 if you believe it's foreign policy, 7 if you believe it's national security, or 8 if you believe it's some other issue. Again, we're getting a lot of respondents on that. It looks like healthcare is topping the issue agenda there. Let me see. Okay, Senator Sanders is ready. He's on the line. It is a great pleasure for me to introduce to you your United States Senator, Senator Bernie Sanders. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you very much, Phil. Let me thank all of the folks who are on the line. Apparently, we have several thousand already, and all those people who will be asking questions. What I want to do is, before we get to the questions, just give you a brief overview of some of the work we're doing here in Washington, some of the concerns that I have. I don't think I have to explain to anybody that we are living in kind of unusual times, to say the least. You know, some of us are older. We went through 8 years of a conservative president in President Bush. We went through 8 years of a more liberal president in Barack Obama. This is something different. And I got to tell you that I have real concerns about President Trump's, not only his policies, and we'll talk about that tonight, but his temperament, his tendency not to tell the truth, to say the least, his support for authoritarian leaders around the world like Mr. Putin or the government in Saudi Arabia, his unprecedented personal attacks against people in the media, and his deciding that virtually all of mainstream media is fake news. And then on top of all of that, I worry very much about his extreme right-wing policies that he has been supporting. You know, when he ran for president, he said he was going to be a champion of the working class. Well, it turns out that much of what he said during his campaign is not true. That's not what he's doing. This health care bill that he has supported is, I have to say, perhaps the ugliest and most destructive piece of legislation for working families that I have seen since I've been in Washington. At a time when 28 million people have no health insurance, this legislation, the legislation that passed the House, would throw 23 million Americans off of health insurance, including tens of thousands in the state of Vermont. More than 51,000 Vermonters over a 10-year period would lose their health insurance. It would raise premiums very, very substantially for older workers. It would defund Planned Parenthood, which would be a disaster for the 12 Planned Parenthood health centers in Vermont. And it would cut Medicaid by some $800 billion, which would not only impact lower-income Americans and many people in Vermont, it would impact nursing home care. Two-thirds of nursing home care is paid for by Medicaid. That means that people now in nursing homes who have Alzheimer's, other types of disabilities, would no longer have the source of funding that they currently have. So this health care proposal, to my mind, is an absolute disaster. I am working very hard to do everything that I can to defeat it. The Republicans did not have the 50 votes that they needed before the July 4th break. They're revising their plan. As I understand it, it's a new plan will come out tomorrow. We expect there'll be a vote next week. And I cannot tell you, to be honest, whether or not this thing is going to pass or not. But if it does pass, it will be a disaster. I intend to do everything I can to see that it does not pass. And then on top of this health care proposal, Trump brought forth a budget, which was even more absurd. This was a budget that made massive cuts to education, to environmental protection, to the needs of the children, to the needs of the seniors. But it also provided $3 trillion in tax breaks to the top 1%. So at a time when we are looking at massive income and wealth inequality, richer getting richer, most everybody else is getting poorer, what Trump's budget does is take away from the people in need in order to give huge tax breaks to the people on top. And lastly, in terms of Trump, his approach to the environment and climate change is incredibly reactionary. In terms of climate change, the debate is over. The scientific community is in virtual agreement. Climate change is real. It is caused by human activities. It is already doing devastating harm to our country and all over the world. And that Trump continues to believe that climate change is a hoax, that he has appointed to head up the EPA and other important environmental positions, folks who do not believe in the reality of climate change, folks who are totally anti environment, is just beyond comprehension. So we are in for some interesting times. We've got a lot of work in front of us, and I would be happy now, Phil, to take any of the questions that folks on the line may have.
Okay. We have a question from Michelle in Ferrisburg, who has a question about healthcare. Michelle, you're live. Michelle, are you there? Michelle, are you there? Michelle in Ferrisburg.
Hello, sorry about that. Thank you, Senator Sanders. My question has to do with high-risk pools. My son has severe hemophilia. He consumes upward of $600,000 a year of pharmaceuticals and medical costs. And so I would like to know what the BCRA would mean for my son and others in the hemophilia community.
Well, Michelle, it's almost painful for me to tell you, because if your son is suffering with a serious illness and if you're running up huge costs in terms of the medicine that he needs, it would be a disaster. And one of the concerns that we have is that when you cut $800 billion a year from Medicaid, a lot of children around this country with disabilities, kids who are on Medicaid right now, will either see a significant reduction in the support they're getting or else maybe lose the coverage entirely. So we are going to do everything that we can to prevent that from happening. But it, to say the least, if this bill would go through, it would be, I suspect, very, very bad news for your family.
Okay. And we have Kurt in Milton, who has a question about healthcare and opiates. Kurt, you're on the air. Kurt in Milton.
Hello.
Yep, go ahead, Kurt. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes. My question is, first, I'd like to just say thank you so much for what you're doing. And I work with patients who are addicted to opiates, and this crisis that we're having right now, this epidemic, I'm fearful that the cuts in Medicaid are going to dramatically impact folks that I work with. And if the cuts affect their lives, I think that the the outcome is going to be pretty dramatic. And my question is, what do you think is going to happen to these individuals if Medicaid is cut the way you're talking about?
Well, Kurt, thank you very much for raising that important question. I don't have to tell anybody in Vermont that we have an opioid and heroin epidemic. It is even worse. I was recently in West Virginia. It is, the statistics there are almost beyond belief in terms of the number of people who are addicted, the number of people who are overdosing, the number of people who are dying, and this is an epidemic that's spreading all over the country. And I think, as Kurt indicated, and it's not widely known, but that Medicaid funds a very substantial percentage of the prevention efforts and the treatment efforts for people who are dealing with addictions. If Medicaid is cut by $800 billion, which is in the House bill, there is no question that the ability of people who are now addicted to opioids or heroin or alcohol, for that matter, to get the treatment that they need will be severely cut back. No question about it. So we're dealing with an epidemic. What we have got to develop is a comprehensive approach toward opioid and heroin addiction. Figure out ways that we prevent it. We stop the young people from using drugs. And we figure out a way to treat it. And in fact, it's going to cost us a lot of money. Substantially cutting the resources available now is absolutely counterproductive, and it will be disastrous. Thanks for the question, Kurt.
Okay. Let me just remind listeners, you can press *3 to ask a question to Senator Sanders tonight. We have Donna next. Donna, you're live with Senator Sanders. Your question, please.
Hi. I'm assuming it's Donna from Newberry. And my question is, I'm a child of the 70s, 60s and 70s, and was very active politically back then. And I see my children and my grandchildren living through this fiasco that started recently and have no idea on how to help get us back on track. And I'm very fearful for them. So I'm looking for answers or suggestions about how do we get our government back to doing the job that they were elected to do and to take care of the people who put them in office.
Donna, thanks for that excellent question. And I share those concerns. And let me start off by saying that I think we're not going to address your concerns unless we overturn this disastrous Supreme Court decision on Citizens United, which now allows the wealthiest people in this country, people who are worth tens of billions of dollars, people like the Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson, and others, they are now spending hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in order to elect candidates who will protect the wealthy and the powerful. So you would stop and you would think, and we've already had some questions on healthcare, you would stop and you would think, who in America believes that it makes sense to throw 23 million people off of health insurance, cut Medicaid by $800 billion, defund Planned Parenthood, raise premiums for older workers, make it harder for people with pre-existing conditions to get affordable health care, all to give $500 billion in tax breaks to the wealthiest 2% and large health care corporations? Who in their right mind believes that? And the answer is almost nobody. The latest poll that was out there had 12% of the people supporting this Republican plan. But how does it go forward? And the reason it goes forward is that billionaires and the very wealthy, they like it. They think it's a great idea that they get more in tax breaks. So if to answer your question as briefly as I can, we need real campaign finance reform. We need public funding of elections. We need elected officials who understand their job is to represent working families and the middle class, not just wealthy campaign contributors. So that would be at the top of my agenda in terms of the kind of political reform that we need. Second of all, we need to revitalize American democracy. We need to get whole lots of people involved in the political process in a way that we have not seen in recent history. So your question is an excellent question, together, we have got to transform politics in America, transform our economy, and make government work for all of us and not just a few.
Okay. We have Linda in Vernon, and let me just remind people again to ask your question. Just press *3 on your phone, and that will get you to one of our staff person. Linda in Vernon, a question about seniors. Go ahead. Linda, are you there? Go ahead, Linda. Okay, all right. We'll go to Ed in Brattleboro. Question about health care.
Senator Sanders.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you so very much for your years of service. I'm kind of wondering whether at this time, with the Affordable Care Act being in this target of the Republicans and been a target for 7 years, whether there's an opportunity with all of the incredible problems with what they have proposed, that there might be some people on the other side who could see the wisdom of single-payer health care, taking advantage of the shortcomings of the Affordable Care Act, such as they are, and creating a new coalition that really meets
good.
The needs of the working people.
Ed, very good question, and that's an issue that I'm helping to lead the way on here in Washington. Let's be clear. I mean, I think what the Republicans are proposing is it's almost a disgrace, and it's just an outrage. But having said that, it is not my view, nor the view of most people I know, that the Affordable Care Act does not need improvements. It clearly does. Deductibles are too high, premiums are too high, copayments are too high, and, by the way, we pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. I was just in West Virginia the other day talking about this issue. A woman came up taking care of her older brother who has some serious problems. She said the drugs that she was using for years, suddenly it went up by 900%. 900% for no particular reason other than the drug companies wanted to raise the price and could make more money. So the Affordable Care Act has problems. And we have got to address those problems. And what the American people, by the way, want is for people to come together and say, what are the problems? How do you lower deductibles? How do you lower premiums? How do you lower copayments? But here are a few ideas that I have in terms of how you improve the Affordable Care Act. And that is, for example, you have a public option available in 50 states. I've got legislation in that will lower the cost of prescription drugs. We can lower the age of Medicare from 65 to 55. But Ed raises another question, which is a very important question. At the end of the day, is the Affordable Care Act enough? And in my view, it is not. In my view, the United States of America must join the rest of the industrialized world. Everybody in Vermont knows that you go over the Canadian border. Everybody goes over the Canadian border. Guess what? They have health care for all of their people, and they do it in a much more cost-effective way than we do it. The cost of prescription drugs in Canada is significantly less than it is in the United States. But it's not just Canada. It's the UK, it's France, it's Germany, it's Scandinavia. It is every major country on earth has said, as I believe, that health care is a right, not a privilege, that everybody is entitled to good quality health care. So I will be, right now my focus, Ed, is to do everything I can to defeat this horrific legislation. Because if we do not, let me tell you something, thousands of people every single year will die when they have life-threatening illnesses and they're thrown off their health insurance. So that's where my energy is now. But as soon as this is over, we are going to put together a national coalition from coast to coast, which is going to stand up and demand that this country go forward with a Medicare for All single-payer program, which is a far more cost-effective way to provide health care than the dysfunctional system we have. And by the way, having said that, all of you, here's my prediction. You're going to see all these ads on television in Vermont. Bernie Sanders, terrible, 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 is going to raise your taxes, all of this stuff. But understand that when you have a Medicare for All single-payer system, the $15,000 or $20,000 a year that you're now paying for your family to get health care, that will disappear. You will pay more in taxes, but you will not be paying private health insurance. And at the end of the day, the average middle-class family will be substantially better off financially than is currently the case. But we're going to have to take on the drug companies and the insurance companies and half of corporate America. But I think there are coalitions out there, and the momentum is clearly with us. I will tell you, Ed, that a colleague of mine told me from Illinois that the Chicago Medical Society, I think it was, not a particularly radical group, those doctors now support overwhelmingly single-payer health care, because doctors understand that they cannot provide the health care that their patients require when patients cannot afford to go to the doctor, when they can't afford the prescription drugs they need. So the momentum is with us. The American people want to join the rest of the industrialized world. It's going to be a tough fight, but I'm going to be actively involved in it. And thanks for the question, Ed.
Okay, thank you. We now have Melissa in Putney who has a question, and let me just remind people again to press *3 to ask your question to Senator Sanders tonight. Melissa in Putney, go ahead.
Hi, Senator Sanders. First of all, thank you so much for your service. My question is, you kind of touched upon it a little bit earlier, and it's about the feeling that our vote doesn't count anymore, and that making change through the democratic process doesn't really work, and that it's all controlled by the powerful wealthy oligarchs. And I'm just wondering what your suggestion would be about how to create a massive movement, you know, and how do we organize this kind of thing across the state, across the country, so we feel like we actually do have a voice. I'm just not seeing that happen.
Melissa, thanks again for that great question, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that all across this country, you have a lot of people who don't even vote anymore. They think the system, political system, is rigged. Doesn't matter what they do, the rich get richer. They lose their jobs. They're working for low wages. And that is the challenge. You hit it right on the head, and there's no magical solution. I think the answer comes back to revitalizing American democracy, getting our brothers and our sisters and our neighbors and our co-workers to begin the process of standing up and fighting back. What you have right now, and here's the good news, you know, and I go all over the country just to try to do that. I just was in West Virginia and in Kentucky just talking to people about that issue. But here's the good news, Melissa. On issue after issue, I'm not going to say every issue, but on issue after issue, this country is fairly united. You know, the media says everybody is divided, red states, blue states. That is not the case. In blue states and in red states, people think the Republican health care proposal is a total joke, that it's absurd. All over this country, people believe we should raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. That's legislation that I have offered. People understand in Vermont and in Mississippi and in California that our infrastructure, our roads and our bridges and our water systems are collapsing, that we can create many, many millions of jobs by rebuilding our infrastructure. Nobody that I know thinks that it makes sense that women are making 80 cents on the dollar compared to men. Right now you have hundreds of thousands of people, young people all over this country, can't afford to go to college. You've got millions of people, many on this, I'm sure, listening to this discussion today. They left school $30,000, $50,000, $100,000 in debt. Pretty crazy when we want our young people to get the best education that they can. All over the country, people are understanding we need to make public colleges and universities tuition-free, that we need to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy, that our criminal justice system is broken, our immigration system is broken. On all of these issues, a majority of the American people want real change. And our job is to understand that there will be issues where people disagree. But most people understand that the system is rigged economically for the rich. Political system is rigged for the large campaign contributors. And our job now is to just be tolerant of people who have different points of view than we do. Go out and talk and educate and organize. And that's what we are doing. And we're seeing some really good results. We're seeing a lot of young people getting involved in the political process all over this country. So I think we are making some progress. But Melissa, you hit, you know, that is the question. How do we revitalize democracy? We give people confidence. You know, we just celebrated Independence Day last week. This country is supposed to belong to all of us, not a handful of billionaires. I think we can do it. And the last point that I'd make is remember, this is not the only frightening moment that our country has had. It's not the only difficult times. 50 or 60 years ago, we had segregated schools. Before that, you had slavery in America. 100 years ago, women didn't have the right to even vote, let alone run for office. We had workers 100 years ago, you know, who almost indentured servants, but people fought back. We have the gay rights movement. Think about the progress we've made. So don't get overly pessimistic. When people stand together and fight back, we can win. The struggle now is an economic struggle. It's a political struggle. It's to make government respond to the needs of ordinary people, not just the billionaire class. And I think if we stand together and not let demagogues divide us up, we can win this struggle.
Okay. Thank you. We have Sylvia in Vergennes, who has a question, and again, I would remind people to press star 3 to ask your question to Senator Sanders. Sylvia in Vergennes, you're live with Senator Sanders. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, Sylvia.
Hello. Mr. Sanders, I don't know how much some of us older people appreciate what you've been trying so hard to do, and I was saying to some of my friends and neighbors here, you know, I wish we could take all those billionaires, as we call them fat cats, and make them come down for 1 month and give them the amount of money that we get on our Social Security and say, okay, here you go. Now live on it for 1 month. They would know then what it's like, but I know they would never do it. And I just don't know how we can ever, what we can do to change this system.
Well, Sylvia, thank you very much, and your point is exactly right. Many of my colleagues, unfortunately, spend all of their time raising money from billionaires and hanging out in country clubs. And the idea that there are people in Vermont and California and all over this country trying to get by on $12,000, $13,000, $14,000 a year Social Security is something they don't understand and they don't care about. And then they have the nerve to go out and say, well, you know, I think we should cut Social Security, you know? Let's raise the retirement age. Let's come up with a formula because, you know, every year, Sylvia, the kinds of increases that you're getting 5, 10, 20% increases, well, being facetious, of course not. Many years you get zero increase or you get 1% increase. But I got to tell you, there are people here in the Trump administration, Trump's a new director of the Office of Management and Budget. He thinks we should cut Social Security, and many of the Republicans do as well. Now, we have legislation in that will not only not cut Social Security, it will significantly expand Social Security benefits. It will provide more for our older people and extend the lifetime of Social Security. Now, you turn on television, everyone's telling you Social Security is going broke, we got to cut everything. That is just a lie and it's not true. With modest changes, like lifting the cap on Social Security, on payments in Social Security, which is now if we lift that cap and we start at $250,000, we can extend the life of Social Security for 60 years and we can expand benefits. That is what we have to do because there are a lot of older people, a lot of disabled veterans who are struggling right now. The bottom line of all of this discussion, Sylvia, is there are people who try to make us believe that we're living in a poor country. We are not living in a poor country. You don't have to cut Social Security. You don't have to cut Medicaid. You don't have to cut Medicare. We are living in the wealthiest country in the history of the world. Problem is, almost all of the new income and wealth is going to the top 1%. That's the fight that we are engaged in right now. But Sylvia's point that there are a lot of members of Congress who have not a clue what it's like to be on Social Security, not a clue what it's like to make 10, 11 bucks an hour, not a clue what it's like to leave school as a young person $50,000 in debt, or not a clue what it's like to be a single mom trying to afford child care for your kids. So we have got to make them aware of this reality, and if they don't become aware of it, we throw them out of office.
Okay, thank you. We have a question about college affordability from Jenny, and I don't have her town, but Jenny, you're live with Senator Sanders. Your question, please.
Hi, is it Jenny from Manchester by any chance?
Yes.
Okay. It's actually not about affordability. It's about student loan debt. And I know this sounds trivial right now with the country in. It feels like a crisis with this extremist government, but there are a lot of people really suffering with student loan debt, and it makes me so angry because, you know, a college education is not a luxury. People didn't take out those loans to go on vacation. They used it to pay for college, and it's really hurting a lot of people. It causes people to put off buying a home, to be able to afford to do other things that are urgently important. And I think it's an urgent issue. And I'm also wondering if the program that exists now to help people forgive to people who are working in nonprofits, if that will continue under Trump.
All right. Jenny, the question that you raised is not a trivial question. It is an enormously important question for tens of millions of Americans, many people in the state of Vermont. I had a meeting in my office a couple of years ago, I'll never forget this, and on this issue. And people came in, I said, okay, tell me, what is the debt? And people from some of the state colleges, $40,000, $50,000 in debt. There was a young woman who graduated medical school, $300,000 in debt. And I was in Iowa, I met a young woman who graduated dental school, $400,000 in debt. And what Jenny is just saying is true. We live in a competitive global economy. Going to college is not a luxury right now. In many ways, it's the equivalent of what high school was 50 years ago. The economy is changing. Technology is changing. Work is changing. People need more education. And the truth is that right now, we have tens of millions of people in debt, totaling over $1 trillion, $1.3 trillion in student debt. So this is an issue that must be dealt with for those people in debt, and we've got to make public colleges and universities tuition-free so that the new generation does not leave school in debt. We have legislation in that would substantially lower student debt. Without going into all of the details, it would substantially lower. Now, one of the programs that I fought for a number of years ago that Jenny talked about, it said, okay, if we work in a nonprofit, work for the government, work for, you know, a nonprofit agency, a senior group or something, what we have is that loan could be forgiven. That loan debt would be repaid as people work in the nonprofit. We fought very hard for the National Health Service Corps, which would allow doctors and nurses who practice in underserved areas to get their debts forgiven. The same basic concept. If you're willing to serve the public, we will forgive your debt. Will that be threatened by the Trump administration? I suspect that it will. Okay, I don't know that for a fact, but I think that it probably is on their chopping block, and we will, needless to say, fight that very, very hard. But at the end of the day, if this country is going to survive economically in a competitive global economy, we need the best educated workforce in the world. We should not be punishing people, as Jenny said, for doing what they need to do. So, Jenny, thanks very much for that question.
Okay. We have Lynette on the line who has a question about voting rights. Lynette, your question for Senator Sanders.
Yes, Senator Sanders, sometimes I get very discouraged because there's so many issues and that our voices aren't heard and the system seems rigged because there are attacks through voter ID and through gerrymandering, all kinds of ways to prevent people from voting or to make your vote not count. What can be done about it?
I'll tell you exactly what can be done, and Lynette, you're exactly right. Yes, and I'm not going to give you a 20-minute speech here because this is an issue that really, really galls me, and I'll tell you why. You know, in a democracy, if you're running for office, you're supposed to have the guts to defend your ideas. And maybe you win and maybe you've lost. I've lost elections. I've won elections. I run on my ideas, what I want to accomplish. And yet you have, right now in this country today, you have Republican governors who are working overtime, not defending their ideas, but trying to make it harder for people who might vote against them to participate in the political process. And you have a president of the United States who came up with a preposterous lie, and he said 3 to 5 million people voted illegally in the last election. Nobody in the world believes that. No Republican election official, no Democratic election official. Total lie, fabrication. But what he was telling Republican governors and secretaries of state, suppress the vote. use voter fraud, which virtually does not exist in the United States, as an excuse to make it harder for people of color, for poor people, for older people to vote. And so they're coming up with all of these regulations, all of the voting ID cards that you have, et cetera, with the express purpose of making it harder for people to vote. Now, I'm happy to say to you that here in Vermont and in a number of other states, we're moving in exactly the opposite direction. In Vermont, the state government, and they deserve credit for this, is making it easier for people to participate. That's what we should, in a democracy, we want more people to participate, not fewer. We should not be happy that we have one of the lowest voter turnouts of any major country on earth. So, Lynette, your point is quite right. Gerrymandering is the other thing that Republicans are trying to do to protect their positions in their majority in the House. There are legal remedies. There's former Attorney General Eric Holder is now heading up a group to deal with some of these issues. I will tell you right here in Congress, people have legislation in to deal with this. Our ultimate goal should be is that if you're 18 years of age and a citizen of the United States of America, you're registered to vote. We can do that. And every American who's 18 should be able to vote without a whole lot of impediments. But thanks very much for that important question, Lynette.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I've just been informed we have had over 15,000 Vermonters who have participated in the call tonight, and one of them is Willa in Peacham. Willa is 10 years old, and she has a question for you, Senator. Willa, go ahead. Willa, are you there? Hold on just a sec. Willa, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, Hello? Go ahead with your question.
Okay. Hi, my name is Willa Kantrowitz. I'm from Peacham, Vermont. I'm 10 years old, and I wanted to know how kids like me can help make a difference.
Well, Willa, thank you very much. Willa from Peacham, thank you very much for calling in, and you are already making a difference, because what you're telling everybody who is on the phone tonight, and apparently we have some 15,000 people, that young people are interested in the world in which they're living in, and they do want to make a difference. So I would say, Willa, that what may be the most important thing that you can do is talk to your parents and talk to your teachers about the issues that you see in Vermont and Peacham and around the country, and start a discussion and get your fellow students interested in that. When I was a kid, we used to have programs called civics where kids learned about government. But I hope that you will talk to your teachers and your parents about the environment and how we create an environment that an environment that will be very healthy for you when you grow up and you have children. How we create an economy so that when you get older and leave school, you go out and be able to get a good job and have a decent house. These are difficult issues, but I hope that you will engage your fellow students and your teachers and your parents in discussing these important issues. Thank you very much for calling, Willa.
Okay, and now we have Chris in South Burlington who has a question about climate change. Chris, you're on with Senator Sanders.
I would like to thank you, Sanders, for taking our call. But my question proposes around how the United States overwhelmingly supports climate change. Many polls suggest this,
mm-hmm.
but yet we still have Trump and the Republicans trying to push forward coal, push forward oil, and like taking us out of the Paris Agreement. How do you plan to try to combat this?
Well, this is another issue of enormous consequence, and if we don't get a handle on it, then I worry about the future for kids like the 10-year-old Willa who just called up. And you're right. This is, again, another example where most Americans, not all, but most Americans understand that the scientific evidence is very clear. The Earth is warming. Climate change is real. It is caused by human activities. And it is already having devastating problems in our country in terms of rising sea levels, in terms of floods, in terms of droughts. terms of extreme weather disturbances. So in opposition, and the people who are calling the tune right now and who Trump is listening to, is the fossil fuel industry. So you got the heads of the major oil companies and the Koch brothers, who are more interested in their short-term profits, squeezing out as much money as they can from oil, gas, and coal, rather than doing what has to be done, and that is transforming our energy system away from fossil fuel. But here is the good news. Chris, no matter what Trump may or may not do, I think the genie is out of the box, and this world is moving pretty rapidly toward energy efficiency and sustainable energy. And in our own small state, we are making pretty good progress, and I've been happy to play a role in that. You drive around Vermont today, you see a whole lot of solar rooftops. We have put a lot of money into energy efficiency. In the city of Burlington, for example, as I understand it, we are consuming in Burlington less electricity now than we did way back in 1989, despite a pretty strong economy. So all over the world, you're seeing similar type of progress. Some of the cheapest electricity, in Chile, for example, a contract was signed. The cheapest electricity ever produced in the history of the world is going to come from solar. Just last week, I talked to some people in the solar and wind industry, and what they said is the costs are plummeting and will continue to plummet. So the future, and that's where the corporate world is investing, not in coal, not in oil, they're investing in sustainable energy to a significant degree. So the future is with us, but we got to accelerate that progress, and we got to create a world where energy is clean and it is sustainable. We got to take on the fossil fuel industry today. So I am optimistic about the future. The question is, we're going to win this. The question is whether we do it sooner or whether we do it later. And our job now is to tell the fossil fuel industry that we want this planet to be healthy for our kids and our grandchildren, and we're not so worried about their immediate profits.
Okay. We have J.D. in Reading who has a question about the Trump administration. J.D.? J.D., go ahead. J.D., are you there?
Hello?
Yep.
Hello?
Yes. Hello?
Hello.
Yes. My problem is that every night on the news I hear another entanglement in which the president has involved himself, whether it's the emoluments problem or a Russian situation, and yet none of this seems to make any difference because his base seems to support him come what may. Do you see anything in the future that might make inroads in injecting some sanity into our attitudes towards the president as a country so that
J.D., I don't agree with your assessment. First of all, let's remember, Trump won the electoral vote, and he won the presidency. He lost the popular vote by almost 3 million votes to Clinton. That's number one. Number two, if you look at the polling right now, he is at the lowest point of any president who has been in office for the length of time that he has been in office. So it's not that, he has a group of people who do support him, no question about it. But his polling right now, his negative ratings are higher than any president who has been in office forever along the 4 or 5 months that he has been in office. So people are not supporting him personally. I think people are very upset about, we're sitting here and thinking, who would have believed that you would have a president of the United States sending out a tweet making vulgar insults to a female TV commentator? And this is becoming normal. It is beyond belief. So he is not popular. He is extremely unpopular. And I think in terms of his base support, I think the more that people who voted for, when Trump ran for office, he said he was going to be a champion of the working class. He said he was going to provide health care to everybody. He was going to take on Wall Street. He was going to take on the drug companies. Well, I think the people who voted for him are learning that he lied. Pure and simple. He's not providing health care to everybody. He's throwing 23 million people off of health insurance. He's not taking on Wall Street. He has hired, you know, Wall Street executive after Wall Street executive through his administration. He has more billionaires working for him in Washington than any president in the history of this country. So he is the establishment, and he's representing the billionaire class. And I think people are seeing that. Things don't change overnight. And our job is to simply tell the truth about what his administration is about, which is an administration that is more anti-working class than any administration in the history of this country. His health care proposal, total disaster for working families. His budget, beyond belief. Tax breaks for billionaires, massive cuts to the needs of working families. The people are catching on. We just got to keep pounding away. What is difficult is that behind them are these zillionaires who have endless supplies of money, who will be flooding the airwaves with 30-second ugly ads, usually attacking people personally because they have nothing to say on the issues. That's the problem. And the problem is that the billionaire class wants it all. They're supporting Trump's economic agenda, but the people are not. So let's keep going. Let's not get pessimistic. Let's keep fighting.
Okay, very good. We have Leo in Weybridge has a question about Attorney General Sessions. Leo, go ahead.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Hi, Senator Sanders. First, thank you for representing Vermont. I'm very concerned by Sessions' Department of Justice. He seems to have a lot of really regressive ideas about criminal justice that belong in the 1980s or earlier, in terms of recommending maximum sentencing for drug offenses, in terms of any number of things that could have really lasting, long-term consequences that can really exacerbate existing problems, systemic racism and all that. So my question is, what can you do as a senator and what can we do as citizens to resist an aspect of the Trump administration and the Trump cabinet that I think is really sinister and doesn't get discussed as much as healthcare or Russia, for example?
Well, Leo, you're right on all counts. The difficulty we have, and in fairness the media has, is that every day there is another outrage, so that enormously important issues like criminal justice and our broken criminal justice system don't get the attention that they deserve. And you're right, I've known Sessions for years. I mean, he was a senator from Alabama, and he and I would chat. He is very, very, very conservative and has a very, I think, antiquated approach toward criminal justice. And I think his approach is maximum sentencing, so let's lock him up. And the world is moving away from that. We have, as you know, Leo, a system in America today where we have more people in jail than any other country on earth. We have more people in jail than China. 2.2 million people in jail, largely people of color, you know, African-American, Latino, Native American. We're spending $80 billion a year locking people up. It's a lot of money at the state, federal, and local level. And I think what people, and I just talked to a fellow from California who's active in this, they understand, and many states understand, that it makes a lot more sense to put money into education, put money into jobs rather than money into jails, money into private prisons. So this is, in fact, a very, very important issue, creating a criminal justice system whose goal is to prevent crime, to make sure that if people are in jail, when they get out of jail, they can live within civil society and get a decent job and get decent housing. So this is, you're right, we have not paid enough attention to it because we're dealing with 50 other things here. But this is just a very, very significant issue, and thanks for raising it.
Okay, thank you. Senator, I think this will need to be our last caller. We have Mark in Plymouth who has a question about the health care bill. Mark, you're on with Senator Sanders. Go ahead.
Hi, Senator Sanders. How are you tonight?
Good.
Okay, I'm wondering what is going to happen to hospitals if this health care bill goes through and people with less / poor people have to go to the emergency room instead of getting preventive health care and aren't able to pay the emergency room bills. What happens to the hospital and the hospital's workforce in the long run?
Mark, that's a very, very important question. If the Republican bill goes through, there is a very deep concern that the cuts to Medicaid will mean that many rural hospitals around the country will literally close down, because in many rural areas, a lot of the money that comes into the hospitals from their patients is paid for by Medicaid. If Medicaid is cut and people are not able to get Medicaid support to go to the hospitals, many of these hospitals that are marginal right now, they're just hanging on by their toenails, they may go out of business. And when they go out of business, you will find that, you know, in a given community, there's 100 jobs gone or 200 jobs gone. And that is one of the reasons why the American Hospital Association, trust me, one of not, you know, not one of the most progressive groups in the world, these guys are opposing this legislation. And by the way, I should say, what it will do to hospitals is very, very significant. This legislation is opposed not only by the American Hospital Association, it is opposed by the American Medical Association, the American Psychiatric Association, it is opposed by virtually every major healthcare organization in this country. And one of the concerns they have is not only how bad the healthcare is system, how bad this legislation is, it's the whole process that we have gone through. There has not been one public hearing. This bill will impact 1/6 of the American economy, and by definition, virtually every single American. You would think there would be a vigorous debate. You know, Mark asked this question, what is the impact on hospitals? Well, there's never been a public discussion about that. There have been no hearings. Everything has been done behind closed doors. So all I could say is, Mark, this will be very harmful for hospitals. My expectation is that rural hospitals all over the country will close down if this legislation is passed. And that's just one more reason why we're fighting to see that this bill is defeated.
Senator Sanders, thank you so much. And thank you to all the listeners and all the callers. Every call without exception was excellent. Really appreciate people listening in and having this opportunity to discuss the important issues facing the country with Senator Sanders. Senator, would you like to take a couple minutes to wrap up?
Well, just let me, again, just repeat what you said. I want to thank all of the folks who are listening and all the people who asked those very, very good questions. You're right, without exception, they were very cogent questions. And I know that there's a lot of anxiety out there. There's anxiety about this health care bill. There's anxiety about the temperament of the president. There's anxiety about Russia. We didn't get into that. And the possible collusion between the Trump administration, the Trump campaign and the Russians, et cetera, et cetera. But what we have got to do is we don't have the opportunity, we don't have the right to be in despair. We've got to continue to fight and to understand that all over this country there are people who share our views and that when we stand united, we're going to win this thing, and we are going to create a government that works for all of us. So I just want to, Phil, thank you and our staff in Burlington for their work tonight, and thank everybody who was on the phone. Thank you all. Good night.
Okay. Thanks so much. Good night, everyone.